In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, June 11, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And it is time, of course, as it is every week at this time, for the fastest hour in federal radio, and that is the Federal News Countdown. This week, my experts to my left on the panel, Josh Soslak, Senior Advisor to the Administrator at the General Services Administration, and to my right, Ed O'Keefe, the Federal Eye. Are you the Federal Eye, or are you one of the Federal Eyes?
I am the
at the Washington Post.
Yeah.
I'm only one of the senior advisors, so he's got
I'd love two or three more eyes, but for now I'm the Federal Eye.
I would think if you had three Federal Eyes at the Washington Post, that would be a little uncomfortable.
For Josh and his colleagues.
Well, and everybody else that you try to look at. I have a sense that this hour might get away from me control-wise pretty quickly, but that's fine. That's why we do it this way. The Federal News Countdown, of course, the point is that every Friday at 2, we invite people like Ed and Josh to come into the studio and select the stories that they think are the three most important federal news stories of the week. They count them down in order all the way from number 3 to number 1, and we post them online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so that you can count them down with us, and we'll be getting to that throughout the hour as well on our website. And so to get right to it, we will start with
number 3.
The third most important federal news story of the week, according to Josh Soslak, is headlined GSA to launch open government apps platform and selected from federalnewsradio.com. And what's the thumbnail here, and why do you think this is a big deal?
Well, I think the important thing to know about this is that we're going to put a platform up on the web for agencies for innovation challenges. And you've heard both the president say, and you guys have actually reported on, that we really want to look at how to better engage citizens and change the way in which we engage citizens in their government.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways to do that is to have better, faster, more interesting, more innovative ways to deliver information back and forth. What this platform allows you to do is run contests. It allows you to solicit information in non-traditional ways and solicit help in non-traditional ways. And it's available to all government agencies so that they have one place to go to do this in an efficient way and in an easy way. But it also helps citizens on the other side, because as they're looking for contests and innovative ways they want to help the government, they don't really understand the difference between what NASA does and what another agency that's also involved in, Department of Energy may be involved in energy saving, and mm-hmm. EPA may be. And they got to go to different websites. This way they go to one place and they get access to all of that information, and they can aggregate it in a way that interests them.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take off my non-objective hat for a minute and say that this kind of thing that Martha Doris and Dave McClure and Bev Godwin have been doing, I think, is really innovative and really terrific, because it does exactly what you're saying. Other agencies can go and say, all right, I don't have to do the work. I can enjoy the benefits that have already been done for me by these people at GSA.
And you know, that's basically our mission statement, mm-hmm. is that's what we do at GSA. We help other people do their mission.
Yeah.
And so if we can do that, then we've done our job and we've helped. And Dave and Martha and Bev and the whole team in Citizen Services and Technology is really focused on how do we engage citizens better and how do we help other agencies do that,
mm-hmm.
so it's directly to the agencies and directly to the citizen.
All right. Josh Soslak's story, I'm thinking of Dave McClure and I'm saying his name, I apologize. Josh Soslak's story number 3 on the Federal News Countdown this week from federalnewsradio.com. Headline GSA to launch open government apps platform. And you can, of course, see that linked up on the in-depth page at federalnewsradio.com. Ed O'Keefe, your story number 3 is from, curiously enough, the Washington Post. Funny how that worked out. Under the headline, Obama orders cuts in federal building costs that could affect thousands of leases, by Jonathan O'Connell and some other guy I've never heard of before.
Hey, if Josh can brag about his agency, I'm going to bring my work to the table. Let's just put it that way.
I didn't tell you couldn't pick all post stories. So it's my fault. This is a big story this week. And the first paragraph says that it could soon be lights out at thousands of government buildings across the country, with President Obama scheduled to sign a memo Thursday ordering federal agencies to cut $8 billion worth of building costs by the end of the 2012 fiscal year. And you talk about what this means potentially, literally, for rewriting leases. And I imagine there are a number of landlords out there and some folks at Josh's agency that might have a little bit of heartburn over this.
And what I think our listeners, considering the understanding our listeners have of the government, will appreciate is exactly what Josh was saying, is that GSA helps other people do their mission. Buried in this, and I think very important to the way this will work, is the fact that the president handed GSA a boatload of responsibility in this mess.
Mm-hmm.
By the beginning of September, all the agencies have to come up with their excess space.
Mm-hmm.
And then OMB and GSA on an equal footing are going to sit down and basically help these agencies figure out what has to go and what can stay and what can be consolidated and what can be handed over to another agency, what could be given over to cities for parks or hospitals or schools, and what very well may get sold off into the commercial real estate market.
I think the interesting part here, it sounds like it's a daunting job, and it certainly is, but at least they're not starting from scratch. You report in here an inventory process started during the Bush administration has identified already about 14,000 vacant structures and about 55,000 others that are under use. So at least GSA has kind of a jump start
on this.
They
do, and we should point out that's a big number, but there are about 1.2 million structures in the federal government portfolio combined. Those vacancy rates much, much lower than the private sector. GSA likes to brag about the fact that they've got about the private sector has like a 16% vacancy rate.
Mm-hmm.
GSA has about a 1 to 3% rate. So they argue they have a very good understanding of how to use space and what should be used, and they want to be able to share that expertise with everyone else.
And I'm glad you point that out, because I think people like you and me that are in the federal media business get caught up in we get caught up in the raw numbers and lose the private-public perspective, when a lot of times if you examine it, we find out that government's doing a lot better than they get credit for.
They are. And in this case, certainly GSA has a very good argument. I think the two challenges that officials didn't want to talk too much about this week are the potential political headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that Martha Johnson's confirmation was held up for 9 months because there was a senior senator from Missouri upset that there was a federal building not being built in downtown Kansas City.
Exactly.
You got to believe that senators and congressmen and governors and mayors are going to be very upset to hear that 15-story office building downtown might get sold off into a very bad, second point, commercial real estate market across the country. So are they potentially setting themselves up for asking prices that are much lower in the end because the market couldn't hold them off? And will the government not sell certain things knowing that they can't sell it?
Yeah.
And does that help them reach the goal or not?
It has the potential, I think, to be another post office closure discussion slash debate.
I use the term civilian BRAC.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And potentially, if they're not careful, it could very well set up that way.
All right. Ed O'Keefe, story number 3 on the Federal News Countdown this week is, of course, from the Washington Post. And the I'm going to razz you about that through the whole show, so just get used to it.
I see GSA on all of Josh's stories, well, except number 1.
All right, fair enough. The headline on story number 3 for Ed O'Keefe: Obama orders cuts in federal building costs could affect thousands of leases. And you can see that story and all the stories we're counting down on the Federal News Countdown this week at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. Back to check out story number 2 in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
What is the Secure Communities Program? How is U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement transforming how it identifies and removes criminal aliens from the U.S.? What about its efforts to improve information sharing with its law enforcement partners? The Business of Government Hour will explore these questions and more with David Venturella, Executive Director, Secure Communities Program within the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
It's the only program of its kind in the world, a unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning, designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. Offered by one of the country's leading business schools, according to a ranking by U.S. News & World Report. To learn more, visit som.gmu.edu/defense or call 703-993-4457. Do it today, because the last day to apply for the fall semester is June 20th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. Do it for yourself. Do it for your country.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Nuclear Security Administration has announced the deployment of a satellite that heralds the beginning of a new era of space-based nuclear explosion monitoring. On May 27th, the U.S. Air Force successfully launched the first IIF series of satellites carrying improved nuclear detonation detection instruments built by Sandia National Labs and Los Alamos National Laboratory for the NNSA. Principal Assistant Deputy Administrator Ken Baker says the deployment of the new instruments will significantly improve the agency's ability to detect atmospheric or space-based nuclear explosions and verify compliance with nuclear test ban treaties. The sensors are being integrated onto Air Force GPS satellites that will carry the sensors, thus the entire planet will be monitored continuously for telltale signs of treaty violations.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Friday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. Remarkable artwork. There's now an app for that. The Smithsonian's Hirshhorn Museum has a new application that walks you through one of their exhibits. We'll tell you about it. And cybersecurity and people, specifically the cybersecurity workforce, and concerns that the pipeline for those people may just be empty. We'll talk to an expert who has recommendations. All that and more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every Friday at this time, and we're up to story number two this week. And the guests that I have in studio, a great lineup, Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post and Josh Soslak of the General Services Administration. And as I said, up to...
Number two!
Second most important news story of the week from Josh Soslak is headlined GSA names first chief greening officer. It's a Reuters story, and this is some people, I guess, saying another C-suite person, Josh, and that may or may not be something that people really think is a good idea, but this is a pretty innovative thing, I think.
Well, I want to tie it back to our previous conversation about federal buildings and being a little more efficient with federal buildings. One of the things about, we talk about sustainability, and you know that's really been a big push in the administration, is the building itself, making the building more green. And you've heard a lot about, you know, LEED certification and photovoltaic and all sorts of things that we're doing. But it's not just the building itself, it's the employees as well. And the reason that I picked this story as important to federal employees is because it's going to change the way that we as federal employees work. And the reason it's going to do that is because we are going to go from being in what was arguably old-style workspace.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be on the cutting edge. We're going to be looking at green, sustainable workspace. And when you look at things like LEED certification, one of the things that drives the LEED points, the way that you get that certification, are things like natural light through 95% of the building. Well, that's not a bad thing for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody who's worked in a cubicle with no light and worked in an office with a lot of light, I got to tell you, light is good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, light, fresh air, all of the things that we're looking at, and certainly energy efficiency, the events of this summer with the oil spill in the Gulf have made it very clear to us we need a better way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think this story really says is we're going to change the way that the federal government looks at office space. We're going to change the way that the federal government looks at how we create that employee environment.
Mm-hmm.
Eleni Reid, who's the first chief greening officer, is part of that effort to do it and working very closely with our PBS commissioner, Bob Peck,
mm-hmm.
and our whole team. We're going to have a whole new way for federal employees to have their work life experience.
Eleni Reid has been director of sustainability strategies for Cushman & Wakefield's Client Solutions Group. Cushman & Wakefield, for those who don't know, is one of the largest commercial real estate firms in the United States, and has a tremendous amount of property management and client representation business in the D.C. area. When the whole concept of LEED certified buildings and green and so on started to come about, Ed, people were telling me, I guess the split was about 50-50 among federal employees, people who thought, oh, this is a great idea, it's going to make my job better and a nicer place to work. And about half of the people were saying, oh, here's just another thing coming down the road, and it'll be popular for a while, and then it'll go away. Is that kind of the same experience that you
had?
Yeah,
I've got two concerns, and if Josh is willing, I'd love to hear an answer. I have what I call the mother-in-law test.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of talk to the mother-in-law about what it is you're working on or what's going on in the government, and I know what she would say to the establishment of a chief greening officer.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me the federal government's creating a job to ensure that federal workers get natural light
mm-hmm.
when there are millions of Americans unemployed right now?
Yeah.
How can the government be devoting time and effort to those types of things when, you know, there are much bigger concerns? And that's, you know, that's a fair question. It's a question from someone who doesn't understand the situation.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who went from sitting by a window to the middle of a room, mm-hmm. natural light and fresh air is a very wonderful thing, and it definitely increases productivity and keeps workers healthy and keeps them motivated and productive. But in an environment that we're in these days, you know, imagine this getting misconstrued by the types of people who misconstrue things, and you may wonder...
Members of the United States Senate.
Or members of the media
uh-huh.
On other radio frequencies.
Yeah.
You just imagine what, you know, how this type of project, though very important and certainly something that can help lead the way for the private sector and for the country as a whole, as government has done really throughout history. It's been on the cutting edge of a lot of these things, and in recent years hasn't been and is now trying to be.
Do you think that gets underestimated, Ed? Because we always say,
you know,
things that happen in the government get private sector models
increasingly,
them.
Increasingly, and I think this administration talks about it a lot, it's been the other way around. It's government catching up to the private sector. And to their credit on this one, they're really trying to lead the way in retrofitting old buildings or getting rid of the ones that they don't need anymore and building new ones and basically ensuring that everything new they build is LEED certified. But at the same time, I wonder
yeah.
how this will be sold to skeptics who worry that this isn't something that we don't have the time and resources to worry about
I think it's partially a communication issue. And Ed, I hear you. I guess the part of the story that I would like to get out to your mother-in-law is...
and she's not listening.
Why not?
She doesn't live in Washington. That's why.
But mine might be. Yeah.
Federalnewsradio.com, Ed.
True,
hello.
That's
yeah,
true.
You know, in somewhere in northern Michigan, my mother-in-law may be listening on the web. You know, this is the wonderful world of radio, so you can't see us, but we're sitting in a room with two big windows.
Yeah.
And part
trees,
of
yeah.
part of what those windows allow us to do is only have two overhead lights in this room. If this room was solid walls with no natural light,
right.
there'd be a whole lot more artificial light in this room.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be generating or using more energy.
Yeah.
We'd be burning more fossil fuel. And so part of what getting natural light to people is natural light doesn't require us to create additional energy to use that light.
And as somebody who's heat sensitive too, those extra lights generate more heat, which requires me to turn the AC cooler,
yeah.
and it just layers right on top of each
absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely. And when you look at things in the LEEDS world, like ventilation, one of the things that we're trying to do in our own building is use the windows that, you know, the building was built in the first part of the 20th century, so it had opening windows. Mm-hmm. Well, we've sealed them all and put air conditioners in, and Bob Peck is going to get those windows open in the renovation of that building or die trying. He is working very hard on that because he really believes that there's a better way to ventilate a building than with an air conditioner for part of the year. Yeah. Maybe not all the time, but let's use the natural where we can.
I get the last word on this. I think, Ed, where people will be able to convince your mother-in-law and people like her, and I have a mom test too, is that with this you can demonstrate a return on investment.
Exactly. If we spend, the way they got to sell it.
Yeah, if you spend this amount up front, which you're going to have to spend anyway, here's the return we get later on. And that's what's going to make it palatable, I think, to people who are concerned about this kind of thing. Josh Soslak's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is headlined GSA Names First Chief Greening Officer. You can find that story at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth and on the Federal News Countdown page on our website. Back to check out Ed O'Keefe's story number two when the Federal News Countdown continues on In-Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
NBC News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. New government figures show the gusher in the Gulf may be twice as big as first thought. Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen says a panel of scientists concluded the spill was flowing at a daily rate as high as 2.1 million gallons.
We'll continue to refine these estimates, and it's not a matter of changing our mind or anything like that. It's a matter of continually getting better refinement and better estimates for the American public, and it is a federal government activity.
Flash flooding from heavy rain has killed 12 people in Arkansas. State police say they're still searching a camping area in the southwestern part of the state looking for survivors. The Commerce Department says retail sales fell 1.2% in May, the first drop since September. And authorities say the 16-year-old California girl trying to become the youngest person to sail alone around the world has been found. Abby Sunderland is still aboard her disabled sailboat in the Indian Ocean waiting for rescuers. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
OnCare Center, this is Stephanie. How may I help you today?
I lost my keys in my truck and my baby's in there.
Don't worry, this happens to the best of us, okay?
Oh, I know.
How old is he?
9 months.
Aww.
As soon as it happened, I freaked out.
Yes, I know. It looks like they have been unlocked successfully for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks for using OnStar.
OnStar is standard for up to 1 year on 35 Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac models. Visit OnStar.com for service length, details, and system limitations.
Shop our best brands and earn instant money now through Saturday at the JCPenney bonus sale. Save on dressing up or dressing down with Doorbusters Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's when men's Stafford dress shirts are half off. Stock up for summer fun with women's swimsuits. They're half off. Add instant money and you're on your way to major savings. Get $10 off on the spot when you spend $50. Who knew shopping could be so rewarding? New look, new day, who knew? JCPenney. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Offers end June 12th.
Checking your daily TSP ticker, the latest numbers from June 10th, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.30. The F Fund falls 0.07 at $13.83. But the C Fund rises 0.37 at $12.99. The S Fund gains 0.55 at $17.16. The I Fund up 0.64 at $16.34. Gains for your L Funds. The 2040 up 0.39 at $15.30. The 2030 rises 0.34 at $15.20. The 2020 is up 0.29 at $15.14. The 2010 gains 0.11 at $15.33. And the L income rises 0.09 at $13.98. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently. and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com. The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Federal agencies are reaping the benefits of desktop virtualization. They're reducing TCO, lowering energy consumption, creating an agile infrastructure, and opening the way for cloud computing. How do you make sense of the changing desktop landscape? Tune in June 16th at 11 a.m. to hear experts from GTSI, HP, Microsoft, and Citrix discuss the growing movement to virtualize desktops. Don't miss the panel discussion on how to jumpstart your desktop virtualization initiative, Wednesday, June 16th at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
In this unpredictable economy, how much money have you lost? Join me, Carl Balestrieri, each week as we tackle the tough situations you've encountered and offer solutions for protecting your money and weathering this storm. In some of my future shows, we will be exploring the truth about investing, some of the things that your broker and financial planners may not be telling you. Join me, Carl Balestrieri, on Federal News Radio, Saturday morning at 10:30 for Right on the Money.
Hey, all right. It's the Geico Gecko here, and I've got a special message for all you government employees listening out there. So all you non-government people can go and make yourself a sandwich or whatever. Okay. Are they gone? Right. So here's the big news. As a government employee, you could qualify for a federal employee discount on car insurance. And that's on top of Geico's already low rates. In other words, my friend, you could be the or more, and you could save 15% or more. And you'd be in good company, too. On average, federal employees who are Geico customers stay Geico customers for 12 years or more. And that's either because they like geckos or they like saving money. Well, maybe a little of both.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Hey everyone, this is Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and story number two this week from Ed O'Keefe is a Washington Post story, surprise, surprise, which is headlined, Messages from Alleged Leaker Bradley Manning Portray Him as a Despondent Soldier. Bradley Manning, 22, had just gone through a breakup, demoted a rank in the Army after striking a fellow soldier, felt he had no future, and yet he thought that by sharing classified information about his government's foreign policy, he might actually change something. This is a story about sharing information with WikiLeaks.
Right.
Pentagon is obviously not a big fan of WikiLeaks, and mainly because Bradley Manning's not the only person sharing information with them. They're getting material from all kinds of places. But talk about the whistleblower ramifications here and the implications all across government.
That's what piqued my interest, mm-hmm. Is that, you know, there are so many people out there who are legitimately trying to get to guys like you and I with not necessarily national security sensitive information, but personnel decisions, policy decisions that aren't right in mm-hmm. their view and probably in the view of most people. But then this guy comes along and gets quite cowboy, frankly, with the material he had. The quote here in the story that really drew my attention, and this soldier reached out to a former hacker who had a bit of a reputation, and the hacker said, quote, if you had unprecedented access to classified networks 14 hours a day, 7 days a week for 8+ months, what would you do, mm-hmm. especially in light of a breakup, a demotion, and the feelings that he had no future? You might get a little desperate.
Mm-hmm.
You got to believe there are people out there in the government in these positions with this kind of sensitive material, with other types of sensitive material, who at least think in the back of their mind, gosh, I should just do this because this guy's ticking me off today, or mm-hmm. I really don't like that this has happened, or life stinks right now. Let me go out and try to find a different way to, you know, feel positive about myself and what I'm doing. And this has big implications because you wonder now, what will the national security community do to address this situation? Is it an isolated incident or is it a bigger problem? Mm-hmm. I think it opens up a whole new line of inquiry for guys like you and I who deal with federal workers all the time, many of whom have sensitive information, others who think they do and they don't, but mm-hmm. they act like they do.
Yeah.
And it's a genuine, I think, a genuine concern and a really fascinating look at one of the real big problems of being a government worker.
I think the comment you made during the commercial break is, to me, the most interesting thing, and that is, I'm surprised, and I agree with mm-hmm. this sentiment, I'm surprised with the amount of information that people would want that people that work for the government have, that this doesn't happen more.
Yeah.
That there is not more information all across. I mean, as hard as the CIOs that you and I talk to and Josh that you work with and deal with through GSA, as hard as they work to keep their network secure, you gotta believe every single agency has really important information of this variety that people would like to know.
But let me make a point here, though, because I think this is important, is this was not an outside hacker coming in and getting access to sensitive information.
Precisely. Right. That's why it's such a big deal.
And so this was not what the CIOs are traditionally looking at. This is that insider threat.
Yeah.
And this is a trusted insider. And, you know, clearly, and I don't know any of the specifics about this case other than what I've read in the Post article. So I think clearly we, the government, need to look at how we look at folks like this. And I think, you know, people who are in positions like this, is the job stress or the life stress or something getting to them where we need to take some action? I think the same thing's true with issues like workplace violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was an interview after the Fort Hood shootings, and they had, you know, a bunch of national security folks on and a guy, Jim Carafano from Heritage, and when they got to him, he said, this is a workplace violence issue, guys.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a terrorism incident. This is not, and we shouldn't be shocked because it happens, and every time it happens, we say, oh my God, how did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't look at the underlying problem, which is we have to be better about providing help to employees.
Yeah.
And making sure they don't get into these situations where they do something clearly. And again, all this is alleged about this guy, but that they don't get into these situations.
Among the files Manning said he leaked, it was a video of a May 2009 airstrike near the village of Jurani in Afghanistan that local officials claimed killed scores of civilians. But that video, which Manning said WikiLeaks, quote, hasn't decrypted yet, was not nearly as damning as a video of a 2007 U.S. Army helicopter attack on Iraqi insurgents that showed civilians, including two Reuters employees, being gunned down. Lamo said Manning gave WikiLeaks the video footage in February. WikiLeaks would said it had multiple sources for the footage and accompanying documents, posted the video in April under the title Collateral Murder.
There's a very good New Yorker article in this week's edition that delves a lot more into WikiLeaks itself
mm-hmm.
and the fact that it is looking for guys just like this one
mm-hmm.
to provide that kind of information. And what did that video do? It caused great headaches for the U.S. military and diplomatic community in Iraq trying to deal with the situation there, and of course raised a lot more questions about the military's involvement mm-hmm. in Iraq back home here. So, I mean, the potential for these types of problems is quite great, and I think, you know, Josh is right. It's a workplace issue, and it's something we have to think a little bit more about, because if there are despondent workers coming to work, you wonder what they might do.
It certainly is something that there's a model for in government, because this is exactly the kind of thing that the intelligence agencies do on a regular basis, is review employees who have access to this kind of information to make sure that there isn't a guy like this in a situation like this. They don't catch them all, as we know from some of the famous spy stories, but there at least is a precedent for it.
Yeah, I think that's the important point, is that we have to do a better job of knowing and providing the help to these folks, because it's not just WikiLeaks and organizations like that that are out looking for these guys. It's our enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're real interested in what these folks, they are gonna befriend these people and provide them with, you know,
Kind of comfort that he wasn't, that he says a number of times that he wasn't getting from his family or from the military.
This could have very easily been a story instead of about WikiLeaks, about some foreign intelligence service.
Yeah.
And interestingly, it's almost a movie. I mean, you could see a movie being made about this.
Now you have something to do this weekend.
Well, there you go.
Write a treatment. Ed O'Keefe's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is from the Post headline, Messages from Alleged Leaker Bradley Manning Portray Him as a Despondent Soldier, talking about leaks that person made to WikiLeaks.org. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, we're up to story number one for Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post and Josh Soslack of the General Services Administration, and we'll hit story number one when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Isn't it funny how just when you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet, and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. And that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Wondering if you've chosen the wrong push-to-talk provider for your mission? Well, it's never too late to switch to Verizon. With the push-to-talk-capable BlackBerry Tor and America's largest push-to-talk coverage area, Verizon delivers the instant mobile voice connectivity and real-time data access your mission deserves, all on a device your people can depend on. To learn how you can put your mission on the map, call 1-800-561-6227 or visit verizonwireless.com/gov.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider with Chris Dorabeck.
Is there a better way to craft federal regulations? The Transportation Department has teamed up with Cornell Law School. Cynthia Farlan is a principal researcher on the Cornell e-rulemaking initiative.
We did their rulemaking on banning texting in commercial motor vehicles, and we opened on their second airline passenger rights rulemaking. So that is open now. We're getting a lot of activity.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is the show where every Friday at this time, we choose two federal experts to come into the studio and choose the stories that they think are the three most important federal news stories of that week. The experts this week are Josh Soslack from the General Services Administration and Ed O'Keefe, the Federal Eye at the Washington Post. And we are up to
number one.
And the top story of the week this week from both of them, what's that?
I said, aren't those singers great?
I love them.
They come in here every Friday for that.
And the wonderful thing is they work for scale. So it really is not, it's not a big expense out of my pocket to be able to take care of them.
And they sing right on cue.
They do. Every time I point the finger, they always do exactly what I want them to do. And
they do birthdays.
They've been known to. They do not do retirement parties, which is cuts them out of a lot of business. Anyway, the serious business at hand here, of course, is story number one on the countdown. And you both have chosen the same concept, different kind of visions of the same story. Josh, your take on story number one from the New York Times is headline, Bernanke warns of unsustainable debt, and talking about the implications of the debt load that the government's carrying. And Ed, your story from the Post is headline, White House is directing agencies to cut budgets. And we've got a similar story at federalnewsradio.com. Why is that funny?
just because neither one of us picked that one. But you know, if you got Chris on here, maybe he'd pick the.
He would pick all Dorabeck Insider stories, which is on the air, by the way, at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'll get hammered if I don't mention that. But the bottom line in both of these stories is the federal government is headed toward a squeeze. If you look at what's happening, especially in Greece and Portugal, and now what's starting to happen in Great Britain, Ed, the story you cited is the 5% story, which I guess if you drill down, to be fair, is really 5% on only about a third of the entire federal budget. Josh, you're kind of nodding your head in agreement with that, because it's non-defense, and it's discretionary programs. It's not the stuff that they have to, the promised stuff.
And the other point that Peter Roizag made this week was, we want you to identify it. It doesn't mean we're going to cut it.
Yeah.
So you may very well see them pick and choose. And in the end, who knows what exactly they will pick and choose. And then, of course, it's Congress's decision what exactly gets cut in the end. But it's certainly a good demonstration of, at least on the surface, that the administration is trying to tighten the belt a little bit more. At a time when I think Republicans are getting ready to hammer them on pay increases and spending and all these other issues that are out there. And like we were talking about earlier, different initiatives within the government that perhaps aren't explained well to people that are short-term costs for long-term savings. And it looks as if they're really preparing to really tighten the belt going into next year as they prepare for fiscal 2012.
I think the parallel to this, I'll give you a chance here in a second, but the parallel to this, I think, happened also this week in England. A new government in Great Britain, and their equivalent of their Treasury Secretary, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, saying they're 20%, and they're saying cuts. They're not saying identify them. They're saying these cuts are coming. Tell us what we're going to cut, and we're going to cut it.
Go back to my home state of New York, Albany, where I'm from. I mean, they're getting ready now to shut down Albany for the first time ever. I mean, the states are doing this.
They don't have the money.
Not only do they have the money, they don't have a political agreement, so it's making it even worse. And if you think the political climate's here, it's just as bad in some state capitals, so you could be seeing this problem play out big time in the coming years.
When you look at Europe and you look at what's happened to the euro, to the pound, you know, it's really changing the face of Europe and how they operate, and we're starting to see that. I think what I found really interesting in the Bernanke story was that the chairman went to the Hill and he didn't say, this is what you should do. He said, you got a problem. There's no silver bullet. Don't stop firing the gun because you got some problems right now, but you can't keep firing forever. And you're going to have to solve this. You, Congress, the president needs to be part of that. And what I think was interesting in Ed's story is that this White House has come out, and they've done it before, where they've come out to agencies and said, tell us what you think. Tell us what your ideas are. Tell us what's good, what's bad. Come up with some new ideas. Tell us what you can cut. And then we're going to have a process by which we make sense of it. But the president has been very clear that he wants information. He wants to make information-based decisions and not just the sky's falling, we're going to cut everything 20%. And my last point is that I think the Chancellor of the Exchequer has the best title in all of government.
That's a pretty cool title, isn't it?
Yes.
To be fair, Britain is in a more severe financial situation than we are. They don't have the ability to sell as much debt as we have the ability to do. At least as we sit here today, that could change. Because debt markets seem like they're starting to get a little bit full based on what I've been seeing on the financial channels and so on over the last couple of weeks. But they have a little bit more of an urgent problem than we do. But 5 years ago, they didn't. They were in the same situation 5 years ago that we're in now. So,
and every economic expert I hear or read says we're going to be in that problem at some point, potentially. Maybe not to 20%, but it could be something similar. So.
Yeah. One difference that I'm hearing, though, that I didn't hear a year ago or 5 years ago following this stuff in government, and Ed, maybe you have some input on this as somebody from the outside looking in also, is I am hearing people in government talk about the fact that from we don't have the money. Not we should do this or we should not do this. We want to do it, but we just don't have the money, so we can't. And that, to me at least, is kind of a new concept for not just federal government. It's happening at the state and local level too, that I haven't heard before.
Yeah, and I think part of that is government remembering, as cliche as it sounds, remembering who they work for and knowing, as we talked about earlier, that there are people who don't have a job and can't spend, and the government has to be smart about it. And I think that's coming, frankly, from the White House, which makes the point over and over again. We're in tough times. We need to cut costs. We need to be smart about how we're spending money. And I think that message is resonating.
If you go back, and I've actually done this to demonstrate how much of a nerd I am. If you go back and you read news accounts in the 30s mm-hmm. and early 40s about what the government did then, a tremendous amount of spending, obviously, during the Great Depression, the public reaction was exactly opposite then to what it is now. And I don't know, I don't know sociologically what was going on. There was a very vocal but very, very small group of people who were opposed to FDR's initiatives after, during and after the Depression. Today, it's real loud and it's fairly broad. I mean, if you'd look at the polling on the, on American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, not very popular. Healthcare reform was sold as an element of economic health for the United States, not very popular. People are not responding to the spending now the way that they did then.
But remember, the difference between what happened then and what happened here is we actually went in ahead of the crash. The big, you know, if you look at where America was,
but yes.
Well, but I mean, and I think that's why we did it, you know, is we didn't have the kind of unemployment that we had during the Depression.
Right.
Had we gotten to that point, then I think you would have seen programs like ARA and, you know, more like WPA, where we're literally putting people back to work who were in food lines
mm-hmm.
and bread lines.
Yes, I keep going back to the argument, though, that we don't know if that's what kind of a crash we would have gotten, Josh. I mean, it's easy to say it might have happened, but it might not have happened.
They tried to get out of Bernanke. He wouldn't answer the question. I mean, it was interesting. You know, he said they basically asked him, you know, was this required? And he said it was helpful. Recovery spending.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jerry Connolly's quote at the end of that article about, boy, it's great to be an economist.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a politician, you'd actually have to answer the question.
Uh-huh.
So I think there is pretty broad understanding or pretty broad agreement among economists that had we not done something at the time, it would have gotten a lot worse.
I think that's fair,
Would it have been as bad as the Great Depression? You know, if I knew the answer to that, I'd go to Stockholm and pick up the medal. But
mm-hmm.
If it had gotten that bad, it's a lot easier to sell the fix.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I'm trying to make as a point.
What do you think 6 months from now, a year from now, we'll see about this 5%? Will this get buried like the Ark of the Covenant at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark in a big warehouse somewhere?
I think we will see – we'll continue to see cuts. I don't think we're going to see necessarily – 5% across the board. I mean, you were saying, even I think before the show started, after November, it's all about Obama himself.
Mm-hmm.
So now he really does have to demonstrate that he's taking this seriously. If the economy's still in bad shape, you better believe that come January, February next year, the budget's going to look pretty tight for agencies. And I think there'll be an understanding that what has to happen.
The nature of our business is that we don't do a tremendous amount of politics, but I think in this case, it's all politics.
It will be.
I think it's all that. Because
he has to prove to the American public that he's being serious about the economy. And
mm-hmm.
the really fundamental way he can do it is by tightening his own organization's belt, and that is the federal government, and that appears to be popular these days.
Yeah.
So he's got to do it.
I just go back to that sociological thing, though, that you said, Ed, that I think is very true, and that is, people are saying, I don't have a job, so why is this spending happening where 70, 80 years ago, the discussion was, I don't have a job, so what can somebody do to help me?
And this White House has a very good understanding of that. I think at least that at least on the surface, publicly, they have to appear to be doing something.
Mm-hmm. Ed O'Keefe and Josh Soslak, story number one, both the same, having to do with federal budgets. Josh's story from the New York Times headline, Bernanke warns of unsustainable debt. And Ed O'Keefe's story from the Post, White House is directing agencies to cut budgets. We'll be back to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
Canadian police are looking for a man who illegally bought enough ammonium nitrate to make a large bomb. There is significant concern about the purchase because Canada's hosting the Group of Eight summit and the G20 later this month. Police found out about it after a farm supply store in southern Canada notified them. The man is described by police as being in his 50s or 60s with brown, unkempt hair and missing fingers on his right hand. Missing fingers are often the telltale sign of an experienced bomb maker. I'm J.J. Green.
When you fly over the North Pole, do you ever think about how remote you are? Air Inc. does, and that's why they have it covered. They're the only company in the world that provides high-frequency data links so that pilots can always communicate with someone on the ground. Air Inc. ensures you're never alone at 35,000 feet. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A new initiative promises to monitor the impact of federal science investments on employment, the generation of knowledge, and health outcomes to a degree not previously possible. The Science and Technology for America's Reinvestment, measuring the effect of research on innovation, competitiveness in science, or STAR metrics, is a multi-agency venture that will be led by the National Institutes of Health, the National Science Foundation, and the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. Together, NSF and NIH have committed $1 million for the program's first year. The first phase of the two-phase program will use university administrative records to calculate the employment impact of federal science spending through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and agencies' existing budgets.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Is there a heroine in technology in your company or branch of government? If so, the March of Dimes would like you to nominate her for the 10th Annual Heroines in Technology Awards. Heroines in Technology recognizes women who exemplify outstanding volunteer service to our community. Nominees will be considered from all segments of the tech industry. To nominate a heroine, please visit marchofdimes.com/metro DC or call 703-824-0111, extension 21. The nomination deadline is August 1st.
Back for just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My thanks to Josh Soslak of GSA and Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post for being my guests on the Federal News Countdown this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Chris Dorabek standing by for the Friday edition of the Dorabek Insider, and I'll be back on Monday with a brand new In Depth on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.